Good morning. As Howard said, I'm not the regular minister. I'm just one of the congregation. But every once in a while, Howard is nice enough to let us come up and preach in front of you, share what we've learned. And as he had said, we're going to continue on looking at the book of Ecclesiastes. And he had asked me to look at Toil is Meaningless. And Howard's done a great job the last few weeks giving us an overview of Ecclesiastes, and last week talking about pleasure is meaningless, sharing from his life, you know, really getting to each of our hearts, like as he shared about burning down his house, that hit me. Like, hasn't that happened to everyone? You know, but anyways, I'm glad to be up here being able to share what I've learned. He's asked me to talk about toil is meaningless. Not sure if that's because he thinks I handle my job really well and I can share about that, or if he thinks I need a message because I've been working too hard. I'm not sure, but before we get into this, we're going to be studying Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 17 to 23, and Ecclesiastes 4, 4 to 8. But before we turn there, let's go to our Father in prayer. Dear God, please be with us here as we share your word. Father, please be with me and help me to take the focus off of me and my preparation and put the focus where it should be, on you and your message. Please help your words to help everyone here. Whether they need comfort, help them be comforted. If they need a second look at where their life is now, help your message do that. But Father, please be with us. You've promised you'd be here whenever two or more of us are gathered. And we take you at your word and we're very grateful for it. And please help us to focus on your word and your son. It's in his name we pray. Amen. I love the book of Ecclesiastes. Not only is it the hardest book of the Bible to spell, but it's very practical. I kid you not, when I was writing up the sermon, I must have spelled Ecclesiastes 12 different ways and got it wrong 13 times. My word processor, the spell check, had turned my whole page red from it, so I ended up just spelling ECCL everywhere. But I love the book. I feel almost like a kindred spirit with Solomon. He wrote this thousands of years ago, near the end of his life, taking a look back on his life. And maybe it's because I'm hitting middle age now, but there's a bit of a get off the lawn kids vibe to Solomon here. There's a bit of things were better in the past. I'm not really happy with the way they are here. But there's a lot of wisdom. There's a lot of focus on God. And I hope to be able to share that with you today. Toil is meaningless. I've looked at this for the last week or so, and I've had to read it many times over. Because when I first read it, it seemed like a jumble mixture of complaints and grumbling with some really good solid advice, but it seemed to be going every which way. But I realized it came down to balance in life. You will be more fulfilled in life if you have a balance. As my brother always says, everything in moderation. And I think that's a central point of this. He starts off, let's read the passages. Ecclesiastes 2, starting in verse 17. Toil is meaningless. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain. Even at night, their minds do not rest. This, too, is meaningless. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat and find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives a task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And moving forward to Ecclesiastes 4, verse 4. And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. This first part from Ecclesiastes 2:17 to 21, Solomon is talking about looking back on his life. He built the great temple. He had made peace with the neighboring countries. He had stored up treasure for the Jewish people. Yet he looks back and says it's all meaningless. Not the building of the temple, not bringing peace to the land, but to himself. Because he realized that it is meaningless. He says, and we don't know if the person we're handing it off to will be good with what we've given them or be foolish. Now, I think Solomon knew. He probably looked at his sons. If you look in 1 Kings, his sons kind of made the following kings kind of made a mess of what he had given the Jewish people. So I think part of it, he was looking at it going, yeah, my fools of kids are going to mess it up. But this is your typical talk of you can't take it with you. And once you're gone, it's meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I don't want to focus on that so much. I want to tell you a story of three couples I know. And when I say couples I know, they're entirely fictitious and I only know them up here. But I want to tell you the story of three couples I know. Over here, you have Linda and Fred. They're a great couple. They are life of the party. They're fun to be around. I play baseball with Fred, and he's a laugh a minute. You know, I asked them one time about their marriage, and they said, yeah, we met back in university. He said, I was just starting university, and Linda had a job at the Gap. And we dated for a while, we got close, and we got married. Said, and as we went through, he said, I finished my second year of university. I was working part-time at Sears, and I realized, you know what? School's not for me. And so I quit school, went back to Sears. I got promoted to manager of the sporting departments. Perfect job for Fred. He is a jock. He loved it. It was great. Now, they are a great couple. Over here, we have Ernie and Tina. And the reason they're over here is the door is open and it's nice and cool. So. But over here, you have Tina and Ernie. They are the modern-day family, modern-day couple. They're both executives at large corporations. They've got three kids. They've got a nice home, two cars, a cottage. You know, life's working out great for them. Tina, she's a vice president of marketing at a large company. She's broken the glass ceiling everywhere. She is on her way to the top. Her husband, Ernie, very supportive of her. He wants to see her succeed. You know, he backs her 100%. Ernie is a salesman, head of sales for a large company. He's down in Brazil one week, over to Germany another week. They keep very busy with their family, you know, driving them everywhere since their kids are in three sports each. You know, they're everywhere, twice a week. 6 a.m. Tuesday mornings when I go to put the garbage out, I see them jogging by. You know, that, and they always say, this is our 30 minutes together. You know, we're so busy, we have to take out this piece of life at 6 in the morning. And then I see them because their daughter plays soccer with my son. And it's kind of a joke on our team because we always have to tell Tina she's working so hard that she's on her BlackBerry all the time working, you know. And so we kind of joke that we have to remind her when her daughter scores so that she can congratulate her. But you know what? Great couple. They give well at church. You know, dynamic couple. You know, they seem a little bit stressed, but hey, it's life, right? And over here is my our friends Gertie and Rick. Got to remember all the names, right? Gertie and Rick. You know, Gertie, she never really liked her real name. It's Gertrude. And her mother always said, well, you know what? It's fine. You can always use your middle name. She's like, my middle name's Winifred. What am I going to do? So she goes by Gertie. Gertie and Rick. You know what? Great couple. And I've known, Rick's been one of my best friends forever. You know, we grew up together, we golfed together as kids, we worked together. You know, Rick is one of the most hard-working men I know. You know, he went off to university, and you know what? He's bright, he's nice, but some things came hard to him. He went off to university to become an engineer. Similar to Fred, second year came, he had to leave. Not because he got fed up with it, but because he realized, you know what, I'm not going to be able to get through this. Luckily, the guys at university said, you know what, we're affiliated with a college. We've seen how hard you work. There's a 3-year diploma at this affiliated college in engineering technology. Because you've worked so hard, we're going to be able to transfer your credits over there, and you can get your diploma. He was thrilled. He graduated, fantastic. Got a great job with a manufacturing company. Gertie, she's a stay-at-home mom. She homeschools her kids. They're having a great time. She sews all their clothes. You know what? They're a great family. And they've got, it seems like, a dozen kids. I think it's only 5 or 6, but, you know, it seems like a dozen. They're always running in and out. I went to visit them and noticed, you know what? I was kind of like looking at their house. It's a very modest house. And I was like, Rick, how can you live with all these people in this house? He says, you know what? We get by. It's, you know, it's 4 bedrooms, which we need at least. And, you know, the 2 oldest girls, they share a bedroom. 2 youngest girls share a bedroom. The 2 boys share a bedroom. And we've got the small bedroom over there on the main floor. And he says, we get by. And it forces the kids to play outside. So they're not in all the time. Life is good with them. All 3 couples are very involved with the church. And when I was talking to Rick, he said, it surprised me because in the manufacturing job, it's not a great salary. It pays for all the bills and that. But he said, you know what? Me and Gertie, we bought an apartment building. Just a small one, four apartments, but it's kind of our retirement fund. And I thought at the time, wow, that's strange. But he says, the nice thing is, you know, at my job, I think a lot. I think a lot, I sit down a lot, and I manage a lot of people. The apartment gives me the ability to work with my hands, which I've always loved. And he says, you know what? I get the kids involved. They love it too. You know, Rick enjoys his work. He enjoys his life. Why am I telling you about these couples? Other than, I think it's a cool story. Well, life happened to these couples. Each of the families lost a job. And I want to show you how they dealt with it. They all went to the same church. Ironically, they were all studying Ecclesiastes. Funny how that happens. Over here, who are over here? Linda and Fred. Linda and Fred. You know what? Fred didn't lose his job. Fred got tired of being at Sears because the boss always had it in for him. And Fred went, you know what? In Ecclesiastes it says, there's nothing better than finding enjoyment in your job, so I'm out of here. And I told the boss, I'm out of here. And he came home. Unfortunately, they don't have any backup plan. Okay? Linda, when he got promoted to the manager's sports department, quit her job at Gap. 10 years ago. Because she thought, all right, this is good. I just get stay home, I watch my soaps, all of that stuff. Right? We can throw parties. As I said, fun couple. But they had no backup plan. And he didn't think through this. And Fred and Linda, they're a little stressed right now. But Linda remembered learning Ecclesiastes 4 in church and reminded Fred that they needed to rely on God. And she quoted verse 24 and 25. Follow with me, because I want you to see something. A person can do a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink, she said to Fred, and Hot Bun Pop, and find enjoyment. Now, if you've been reading along with me, you've noticed she may have missed a few key words. But as she reminded Fred, we need to rely on God. So she suggested, while they wait for God to help them, that they go on vacation. You know what? They used to have all kinds of parties. Now I don't see them quite so often. And I ran into Fred. He still hasn't found a job. He's saying the bills are kind of coming due. We're a little stressed. Over here, Tina and Ernie. Tina lost her job. Not through any fault of her own, because she is an amazing worker. But she works for a large corporation. And her boss was sad to see her go because she was such a great worker. But head office, way over there, looked at her as just another number. And she was let go. I saw Ernest a few weeks ago, and I asked about how Tina was doing. He said, well, she's rather crushed. And when I asked, is there anything I can do to help? He says, no, I don't really think so. I haven't been able to talk to her much lately because I just got back from Brazil, and, you know, I got a day or two here just to recuperate till I got to go back over to England again. But I'm sure she's doing fine. She's seeing a psychologist, and everything should be fine. Now, I really hope she gets back on her feet soon, which I think she will, because you know what? We were planning on upgrading our cottage this summer, and my neighbor has this great cottage, better than ours, and we really wanted that. So we need that salary coming in. But you know what? I'm sure she's fine. Everything will be fine. The nanny's taking care of the kids. Everything should be fine. He seemed a little bit stressed, though. Now, Rick lost his job at the manufacturing plant because they got bought out by another company. And the other company thought they'd become more efficient, which is just another way of saying, we got two of the guys, I'll make this guy work harder and I can lose his salary. Since Gertrude was stay-at-home mom and homeschooled the kids, they were a bit concerned, but they had savings. The apartment mortgage had been paid off a little bit, and they could make do. But Rick went right out, started putting his resumes out. In the meantime, he took advantage of the time to go work on the apartment, bring the kids, and they became closer. You know, they focused on what was important. Rick got a job out in Alberta. He wasn't sure how permanent it was, but they prayed about it, they thought about it, and they thought, you know what, we need to do this. And so he went up to Alberta. They sold the home. They moved in with her mom in her mom's basement for a while. Her mom was old, so they needed to take care of her. He got a small apartment in Alberta, but they made it work. 9 months later, luck would have it, he got a job back at home. Now, it was a lot less money than out in Alberta. Wasn't exactly the job he wanted, but he'd be back with his family. He made sure it was important. And what do these people and their problems have to do with Ecclesiastes? Well, over here, the reason I named them Tina and Ernie, probably apparent to how extreme they were, toilsome Tina and envious Ernie. And as Ecclesiastes says, what do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain. Even at night, Their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. This is Toilsome Tina's primary verse. You know, it's not a problem to excel at your job at all. God wants us to work for others as if we're working for the Lord. He wants us to excel and do well. But she lost sight of the picture. She got her self-worth from her job. She didn't focus on God. She focused on what her job said about her. And when that job was gone, which can happen to any of us, her self-worth plummeted. Solomon is saying that. Do not put your self-worth, do not put what you think of as successful into worldly things, into your job. Envious Ernie, his verse, I saw, chapter 4, verse 4, I saw all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And back in chapter 2, verse 26, to the person who pleases God, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth. Ernie, he was more concerned about his job, about the cottage. You know what? I'm sure my wife will be fine. She's strong. He wasn't there for her. He took his focus off of God, and what God teaches us is most important in our life. He was striving after the wealth. And as it says, if you strive to please God, then He will bring wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. Maybe not in the short term. There will always be problems. As Rick learned, there are problems. Rick focused on what was important. He focused on God, what God had told him. And it brought him happiness even in the strife and stress. Over here, Foolish Fred and Lazy Linda. This is why I got Gertie and Rick too. Lazy Linda, verse 5 in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, says, fools fold their hand and come to ruin. Foolish Fred. Oh, sorry. Let me pick this up so I know what I'm talking about. Now you look at Lazy Linda, Foolish Fred. I'm just quitting my job, telling the boss where to go. You know what? I quit the Gap because my husband has a job at Sears. I can watch soaps. We can go on vacation even though we don't have money, but we have a credit card. You look at that and you think of the life lesson, right? Yes, fools fold their hands and come to ruin. But sometimes as Christians, you know what? Linda was sincere in saying we need to trust God. What she didn't realize, God made us to work. God gave us the skills with our hands, with our brains, and He gave us satisfaction in our toil. Ecclesiastes says that it doesn't stop with toil is meaningless, but it says there's nothing better than to eat and drink and find enjoyment in your toil. Right? Rick found enjoyment in the apartment. Might not be for me. He found enjoyment in the apartment with bringing his family together. And as Christians, sometimes we can use the excuse to say, we just need to rely on God and wait for God. And it reminds me of that old joke. The floods came. And a guy, to escape the floodwaters, climbed up onto the roof of his house. And he sat there and went, God, please save me. You know, and he's sitting there and the rains are coming down and he's sitting there and this boat comes by and says, hey, we got an extra spot. Want to come on? No, no, I'm good. God will save me. I'm waiting for God. He says, God, come save me. And then a helicopter comes by, ropes down a rope ladder, says, climb boy, says, no, I'm good. I'll wait for God. He'll like clear the floods away. You know, and then I'll come down and I'll be saved. Finally, the waters rise and rise and rise. He drowns. Goes up to heaven and says, God, I prayed to you. I trusted you. Said, save me. Why didn't you save me? He said, I sent a boat. Sent a helicopter. What more do you want? Sometimes as Christians, we can be like that. Dear God, please help me here. I'm in such dire straits. And then do nothing. You know, God says we're not saved by our own works. It depends on Him. But we need to put out that little bit of effort. Right? Do follow His word. Jesus said, if you're truly my disciples, then you will hear what I say. You will do what I say. Then you will know the truth. There is a part of do what I say. Fred and Linda didn't get that. Then we have godly Gertrude and righteous Rick. They live by the two key verses of Ecclesiastes 2 and 4. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without Him, who can eat or find enjoyment? And Ecclesiastes 4 to 6, fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Right? You looked over at envious Ernie over there. He wasn't satisfied with one handful. Doesn't seem like he was satisfied with two handfuls. He wanted the old enchilada. I'm sure he lived by those who have the most toys when they die win. Right? Over here, they skipped all of that work stuff and thought only of pleasure, as Howard talked about last week. Righteous Rick, godly Gertie, they focused on God. They focused on what God told them was important. Family, right? Enjoying your toil. Not no toil, but enjoy it, because you're going to have to work. You're going to have to toil, but put the focus where it should be. And Solomon is talking about moderation, everything in moderation, a balance in life. But where do we, you know, you got to ask yourself right now, what person are you today? You know, it's kind of hard. I've given you extremes. And if you're, are you like toilsome Tina, envious Ernie, lazy Linda, and foolish Fred, or godly Gertie and righteous Rick? If you're like me, you strive to be these guys. But if you're like me, you tend to go off one direction or another. I'm very fortunate. God taught me at an early age about focusing on possessions and things of this world. When I was in high school, I entered grade 9 with a brother that was older than me, who had won Athlete of the Year 5 years in a row. First class, Mr. Spencer said, "You're Alan's brother? All right, you're going to join the wrestling team." I take off my glasses. I can't see the guy in the front row. This is how I wrestle. But I spent 5 years toiling after that Athlete of the Year just because I wanted to be like my brother. And again, I had fun doing it, so it wasn't all bad. But what God taught me was, here I am, grade 12, and I thought, this is the year I'm winning Athlete of the Year. And I got up there, and I was president of the Athletic Association, and they said, "Well, Dave, we don't want you to announce it," even though normally the president of the Athletic Association would announce it. I went, "Oh, yeah." Got up there, and it's Mark Clavel. And I just was like, wow, okay, I got one more year left. Meanwhile, in the hallway, the next day, everyone's congratulating me on winning Athlete of the Year. And I was like, no, I didn't win it. The next year, grade 13, I ended up winning it. And I realized they'd kind of split it up between Mark and I because we were both striving for it. But everyone came up to me congratulating me on winning some different award. And I went, "I got Athlete of the Year." And they went, "You did?" That's when I realized, you know what? It's meaningless, a chasing after the win. In fact, my dad found the trophies in his basement a few years ago, brought them over to my house, and I went, "Oh, great. Next garbage day, they were on the curb." Honestly, I thought I had killed my father. I thought he was going to have a heart attack when he found that out. I said, "Well, I kept this one. It was my, like, club's award." And he was like, "Oh, anyway." And then later on, God taught me that I can't find self-worth in a job or career. When I graduated high school, I remember in grade 13 giving an interview to the local newspaper. It's not as cool as it sounds. My town had like 8,000 people in it. But I told them, they said, what are you going to do after high school? I'm going to be a rock star. Like, I read that now and I just kind of go, oh my gosh, what kind of fool was I? But that's what I said. That's what I believed. And I went to university, you know, did music and all of that. And then when I graduated, I went to Toronto to become an actor. You know, I loved acting. I love being on stage, if you haven't figured that out right now. I love that part of it. I found that, you know what, the industry, though, it just didn't fit with me. But the cool thing is, I came to visit my brother here in Ottawa. And I had a job interview. His wife's friend owned a recording studio. So I went in there, got an interview. 6 months later, I got a job writing music full time. I'd go in for 8 to 10 hours a day. I could bring in musicians. I had synthesizers. It was my dream job. I thought, I don't care that I'm only making $18,000 a year. I know I can't live on that, but hey, this is a great job. Enjoy the toil. Except I was expected to write 3 to 5 minutes of music a night. Was great for the first 2 years. The third year, I came down to like putting CDs of Wilson Phillips in the CD. Yeah, if you're my age, you go, ugh, you know, just to get inspiration. I left that job after 3 years and started my own business with a business partner of mine. I couldn't write music or find enjoyment in my music for at least a decade after that. And that's when I realized, you know what? Here was this dream job that was going to fulfill me. And 3 years later, that's kind of like Fred. Yeah, I can't do this anymore. Different reasons, but similar. Now I have a business partner. It's been a great 20 years. Later on in Ecclesiastes, it says, two are better than one. And it's true. You know, I've not become famous like I thought I would in high school. Will I get rich? Not if the past 20 years is any indication. But I get to spend each day with people I enjoy being around. I've got a great friend as a business partner. He took care of our business when I went out for heart surgery. Took care of my family when I was out for months on end. Being a small business owner, we didn't have any insurance. He used his own money to help our family. And the great thing is it's allowed me in the last 20 years or last 16 years to take time off whenever my kids had something at school. It's allowed me time to coach my kids in hockey, which I think has brought us closer. You know, it's been great. God has been teaching me these things, helping me focus on what is important. Unfortunately, those lessons are easily forgotten. In 2008, the economy took a dive, especially in the States. And our company sells pretty well primarily to the States. Things got tighter. This past summer, they've been getting even tighter. Instead of focusing on God, I started to slip this direction. I got to work harder. I got to work longer. No, you know what? I don't have time to go golfing with my kids. Yeah, honey, sorry, I'll sit and watch this TV show with you, but I got to have my laptop open and keep working. God's always bringing us back. And I'm so grateful for Howard allowing me to study this over the last week and helping me to bring back that balance. Where do you get the balance? Last 2 minutes here. Where do you get the balance? From God. You know, yeah, you can kind of ask, centering your life on God, how's that balance if you're only focused on God? But God's like the Father, who has all the wisdom. If you focus on Him, He will give you that wisdom and guidance. And He wants to share with His children, with us. He says, listen to me. And He knows what we need to have fulfilling lives as well as eternal lives. As Jesus said in Matthew 6, this is the other verse, Matthew 6, verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, You know, if we focus on Jesus' words, as he said, listen to me, do what I say, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. We need to focus on the treasures God gives us here on earth, our families, our friends. In Paul's many letters, he says, you know what, I can do everything through Jesus who gives him strength, through God who gave him strength. But all his letters, if you read them, talk about his friends, all the friends he's met. You know, talks about God and Jesus. He says, I know what it is to have little, have much. That's meaningless. God takes care of us. We need to focus on the treasures God prepares for us on earth. But even more importantly, focus on the treasures that he gives us in heaven. And as Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God, for without him who can eat or find enjoyment? Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. So I want to close up because you may be wondering, what happened to my friends? I'm a sucker for a happy ending. So it was nice. Gertie and Rick, they took them under their wings and said, you know what? We've been studying Ecclesiastes. Let me help focus you guys on Jesus again. And Fred and Linda, they've gone out. They found jobs they like. Fred actually got humble, went back to Sears, said, I need my job back, and I'll do it happily. And he's learned to find enjoyment in that, of helping people. Tina, you know what? She took a job at a smaller company that gives her freedom to be with her children more. She's got rid of the crackberry. You know, she's not on that anymore. When she's at her daughter's soccer game, she's focused on her daughter. Fortunately, Ernie, they got divorced. I take my story seriously. But the good thing is, five of the six of them refocused on God. They listened to God, focused on him, and realized it's never too late to change. Never too late. Whether you're lazy, foolish, toilsome, whether you slide back and forth, it's never too late to focus. And that's what I want to leave with you today. No matter where you are in life, whether hopefully this message either inspired you, comforted you, or made you think, it's never too late to focus back on God. Hey? Amen.